215-219-2950. Two more people. It's 57 past the hour. Two more people. Oh, if there's not enough people answering in the back. Oh, no, we can take two more calls. All right, let me hear it. Come on. I know you're dialing two. Group dial. 219-2950. Ought to be seeing some phones ringing. 212-209-2950. You can do this. Get the power of nightmares or the nuclear shadow. 209-2950. This is the closing minute of Earthwatch. I know you think we're going to 1:30, but we're not. Tonight, 209-2950. Want to make it hot in here for Jim Freund. Coming in with some science fiction, sci-fi for you and I. 209-2950. We need two more people. Seriously, folks. 209-2950. Oh, God, we are so close. My God. Either one of you can be the one to do it. Two more calls. 209-2950. I can't sing, but my heart is full of joy. 209-2950. You're about to do it. You're about to make a miracle for the fundraising period tonight. And you're saying that it's going to be all right. If we come back again another time next week. 212-209-2950. One more call. Let us hear the music of that phone bell ringing. You guys are great. I mean, you're like good sex. I mean, you wait for the climax. You always wait until the end of the show. My God! How do you work that? Why do you do that? I guess it's so I can feel good when I go home, because you believe in something I believe in, and that is WBAI. You believe in the intelligence of this radio station. You believe in the presence of a brain. You believe that magnetism is more powerful than force, and for that I love you. I'm Robert Knight. This is your BAI. And you've been listening to a special edition of Earthwatch with a very special and loving audience. And I cannot any better express my agape than that. Jim Freund will be up next. This is the Wayseer's Manifesto. And you saw it. You saw it and you got it right. Thank you so much. I'm Robert Knight. See you next week.
$20 more. Put yes! Robert over the top. $20. 212-209-2900. It's at 980. We need $20. Now, you listening to me. Yes, it's you. Now. 212-209-2900.
The Gestapo.
Sorry. 2950. 2950. 2950.
Socialized programming even gets through. But your mind is different. Your mind has been cracked wide open to the way. By some miraculous genetic trait, some psychotropic chemical, or maybe even by the will of your own soul, your brain's reward pathways have been hijacked. Dopamine employed to overthrow the fascist dictatorship of your prefrontal cortex. Now your brain is free of repression, your mind free of censorship, your awareness exposed to the turbulent seas of the unconscious. Through this open doorway, divine light shines into your consciousness, showing you the way. This is
Seer. 90% of human civilization is populated with those whose brains are blocked to the way. Their brains are hardwired to enforce the social programming indoctrinated since birth. Unlike you, they cannot break out of this programming because they have not yet experienced the necessary revolution of mind.
These program people take social institutions and rules very seriously. Society is full of games programmed to keep people's minds occupied so they will not revolt. These games often cause sick fixations on peculiar protocols, power structures, taboos, and domination. All subtle forms of human bondage. This distinct form of madness is not only tolerated by the masses, but insisted upon. The program ones believe in rules so forcefully, they become willing to destroy anyone who violates them. We seers are the ones who call them.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and stuff like that there. My name is Jim Freund. With me, Genevieve Valentine and Liz Story. We're talking movies. It's just, well, movies. Just stay tuned. I mean, yeah, we'll do a phone number, but we're talking movies. Good morning. Well, we're giving Robert Knight a Sturgeon lesson. It's like what to read first, which is like, you know, which particle of air should I breathe first? It's about as simple a question as that. Now, if one were to ask me a question of like, which Genevieve Valentine novel should I read first? The answer is easy because it comes out on Friday.
And there's only the one.
And there's only, well, that's why one would read it first. Unless you're actually listening to the archive 5 years from now.
If so, I apologize for selling out at the first opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, that HBO series of yours, I'm sorry, it did not live up to the novel.
As long as people are buying the novel at Sam's Club, I'm totally happy with that.
There you go.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, I'm sorry, I was watching Doctor Who before it was. It really screws with you, these Stephen Moffat scripts.
I think he tries. I mean, sometimes he tries too hard to do it.
Yeah, I felt that way about the first episode of the new season. Have you watched the new season yet?
Outstanding, I have to say, but a little over the top.
Well, I mean, say that the Matt Smith, Stephen Moffat stuff is over the top. First of all, not enough Alex Kingston. We need more River Song.
More River Song. Bring her back immediately.
Yeah, absolutely. The idea that her name is not before the title of the show gives me pain.
Agreed, 100%.
Yeah, it's. But having said that, I liked the second part of the two-parter. I was whelmed, not over, not under. By the first part. After the Pandorica thing, which was tops, which was one of the best romantic comedies of last year, was the whole season of Who last year. It just didn't quite match up. And by the way, huge Spike Milligan fan, therefore somewhat of a Stuart Milligan fan, but he is just not the best Richard Nixon I have ever seen.
The best Richard Nixon is his floating head on Futurama.
Yes, without question.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Genevieve, I'm going to ask you to talk for a moment while I figure out which mic is properly yours. And because you sound very off-mic to me, so I'm going to be playing with some knobbies over here. So just talk.
Just talk.
Oh,
okay.
That's much better. Okay, now Liz. You got me? Yes, I got you. Now, Liz, you talk.
Hello, hello, hello.
Okay, yes. And now say something else.
Doctor Who was a fabulous, fabulous show.
Ah, okay. I pronoun trouble or no, something like that. I was having four people in the world got that joke. But that's what this morning's show is going to be like. Let me explain. Normally at this hour, you would be listening to Robert Knight finishing Earthwatch, waiting with bated breath, no doubt, for me to come on the air at 1:30 for my 5 a.m. show. Don't ask. It's a long story. But I used to be on the air from 5 to 7 a.m. for 38 years. For 38 years. And then Wednesday nights. I don't know. I used to be on Wednesday nights. That was years ago. And then I was midnight to 5. The idea that today anybody would have a 5-hour show.
Midnight to 5. Oy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, thank you.
We split up the airtime from like 10 p.m. to midnight, midnight to 5, 5 mm-hmm. to 7, 7 to 9, 9 to noon, noon to 2. Yeah, 2 to 5, news till 7, and then evening programming and starting again, usually at 11.
Better
11 to midnight,
me.
Midnight to 5. Ah, those were heady days indeed.
I can imagine.
And they couldn't throw me out of the place. They tried. I was barred twice. It's true. pardon me. But now I am here. And will I stay here? Will I get, this time? Will I spread my elbows out to get back to 2 hours again like we will be this morning because we're on until 3? Well, that's largely up to you. No, not to Liz, not to Genevieve, to you, the listener. It's up to, are we going to make any bleeping money or any non-bleeping money this morning? Well, here's the idea. Most people come on the air and they have premiums. They have, that you get that, $25 DVD for donating $200 or $300. And for some bizarre reason, this works. It works. People get that money and stuff like that. Then they wait for 2 years till they call BAI and say, where's that premium that I, was supposed to get so many years ago? And it's like, oh, I'm sorry. That was the previous WBAI. We're boring and insolent. Or we beg at intervals. Well, there's a lot of things that WBAI stands for, but. So, the premium this morning is we have no premium. What we have are glib, talkative, wonderful guests who are going to talk about movies. And in between that, I'm going to interject every so often, and Genevieve's going to help me a little bit, give people compelling, because you've been on the show now.
This is like my fourth time.
Yeah, I was going to say four or five times.
And we started out trying to pretend that I was a serious person of literary merit, but we have
But now that your first novel is out on Friday,
I'm done. The work is over. I'm going to talk about Tron and Priest for the rest of my life.
Excellent.
This is what happened. In January, she comes on the air with her editor, her totally serious editor, John Joseph Adams. While waiting to come into the station, they make the huge mistake of going to see Tron Legacy.
To some degree, we knew what we were doing. We knew that Tron Legacy was not going to be a good film. We were not prepared for how bad it actually was.
The total badness.
And so we came on intending to talk about something entirely different, and for 3 hours...
Talking about his book with her in it.
No. What was more important was how bad Tron Legacy was.
Fact, I saw it 5 times in theater.
I don't even know her.
No. That brings up a different question is, do you know where I can get some of that stuff that makes it palatable to watch? Because, anyway...
To be fair... The number one movie that I have on my docket for this summer is the same movie that she has on her docket for this summer, which is the Paul Bettany Catholic Church fights vampires in a futuristic setting for no reason, Priest.
Mm-hmm.
We are so excited.
Comedy of the summer.
Excited.
Okay. Paul Bettany.
Yes.
Should not play blondes. He looks so much better as a brunette. Master and Commander, right look for Paul Bettany. Blonde Priest, sorry.
The right look for Paul Bettany is without his shirt on.
I'll take your word for it.
I'd say the right look for Paul Bettany is not being in any more of these terrible movies until he can screw his head on a little better.
He's so good.
He signed on with the same director who did Legion to do this movie. Legion is one of the worst movies I have ever seen in my entire life.
And that's saying something.
And that is saying something. And he signed on with the same director for this movie also. I can only assume that he needed to buy a brownstone in Brooklyn. There is no other reason for him to have done this film. I'm going to go, and I'm going to watch him act as hard as he possibly can in a movie that is impossibly ridiculous. But I'm not going to like it.
But you're going to enjoy it.
But you're going to have a good time.
I'm going to have a blast.
Because Genevieve Valentine is not only this really fabulous, she's going, I hope everybody at home can see the come hither signs that she is. Yeah, the bring it on, that's it, thank you. Signs that she is making. She is arrived at this point, so I can't say, forthcoming writer or anything. Although I think the first time you were on the show was before you actually had your first story published. Isn't that correct?
My first time on the show was my first time reading anything and my second publication ever.
And that was a darn good reading.
Well, thank you.
That was a darn good reading.
Which story?
Karthik O'Dolenda Est.
One of my favorites.
It's.
I paid her to say that.
It's one of my favorites, too. And that was a good reading.
Thank you.
That really was.
My favorite is that the spoiler's in the title.
People still ask
now,
me
you see,
what it's about.
To quote Alex Kingston, spoilers. But I will never be able to use that word again without trying to invoke
Alex Kingston.
There
what,
are worse
what
people
at all.
To invoke than Alex Kingston.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, late E.R. Alex Kingston, not as good.
Maul
Flanders Alex Kingston. Very cool stuff.
She was excellent. She's excellent in everything that she's in.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone goes to ER because they really desperately want a nest egg.
By the way, I say, spoilers, I say, I have no way of knowing, I'm just saying that the little girl is River Song and she's a Time Lord. That's
I'm with
all
you.
I'm saying.
I'm with you 100%. I totally think that.
At one
As
point,
someone who hasn't seen Doctor Who in 2 seasons... Can I just agree and then we...
Spoilers. But I will. But my original theory was that she is like the 18th or 19th Doctor. That was my original theory.
Yeah.
And that's not completely out of it. And the, let's one-up Russell T. Davies, who has, the Doctor, at least John Barrowman, betting anything that moves.
Yes.
But how about the Doctor with himself?
With himself.
As or a with woman. Herself.
Yeah, that would be fun. And I bet Stephen Moffat could do it. He could pull it off.
And so River Song could be the Doctor.
Wouldn't that be fun?
That's a crackpot theory of mine that If Moffat hasn't thought of it, of course he's thought of it.
Of course.
Anyway, we're not doing a Who show this morning. Although it's hard for me once I get into that mode to pull away.
Although I'm very curious about the U.S. version of Torchwood. What is that going to be all about? Why must we have a U.S. version of Torchwood?
Because the BBC didn't pay for it. And Stars would.
Oh.
That's it. Because, you know, Russell T. Davies folded up his tent.
Hmm.
The only thing that he was doing for the BBC was the Sarah Jane Adventures.
Mm-hmm.
Sob. And the you see, now I can't get off my favorite companion.
You always have your first.
You always have your first, and in some ways the last. The idea that this 60-year-old woman could have her own adventure TV show that was good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, it's time. We're here. And who do they have on Doctor Who? Alex Kingston. The time for women who are, you know, in their, you know, who are...
May past their Hollywood prime.
Yeah.
Not in their Hollywood prime. And some of them may have even had their hot flashes come and go.
Absolutely.
As leaders of shows.
Mm-hmm.
That's a ride.
Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Outstanding. I miss that show so very much.
I didn't watch the second season, but I will eventually.
You should. Put it on your list.
You know, if only for people named River. No, that's a stretch. Okay. You have to be a Firefly. But anyway, a brown shirt. What do they call themselves? Brown?
Brown coats.
Brown coats. Yeah, brown shirts are something else altogether.
Yes.
So the premise for this show is for us just to geek out and have fun and for you, the listener, to recognize that we're doing something on WBAI that not everybody on WBAI does.
Celebrating never leaving the house.
Yeah.
We leave the house. We left the house to come here.
Yeah, and then we're going to go right back and watch movies.
Oh, that's a good point.
Well, you have a big screen then.
I actually have a really old clunky TV. It is technically a flat screen because it was made in like 1999 rather than anything else. But I do not have a thin. I do not have HD. I am going to be dragged kicking and screaming.
They're cheap now.
I know
they're cheap. But for some reason, I like the slightly fuzzy look. It's very comforting to me.
Yeah, well, in my case, it's just
Liz is appalled. Her face right now is just like, I'm going to be here all weekend watching TV on this. Disaster.
So we're going to be doing this, and we're going to be telling you the compelling reasons why one subscribes to WBAI and makes sure that this radio station survives, and further, why this show, Hour of the Wolf, which has been on the air for lo these many years since Margot Adler created it in 1972, why we have shows about speculative fiction, serious and not, and all the wonderful stuff that we have been bringing you on the air, be it, you know, tributes to Sturgeon, the forthcoming 3-hour tribute to Joanna Russ, the sublime and the ridiculous, okay? We run the gamut.
You can certainly donate tonight in the name of Paul Bettany, who's going to need the good press in about 9 days.
And if this movie dies, may need the money. Except that it goes to BAI instead.
It stays here.
Because we are listener-sponsored radio, not just listener-supported radio. Our budget is basically just your donations. We're not doing the grants. We're not doing this. There's been controversy about that, but no, we're still relatively grant-free outside of some bills being paid by CPB so we can play music on the air and stuff like that. The bottom line is, without your money, we don't exist. And without your money, the program director goes, Freud! Okay, so.
No pressure.
Yeah, he practically did that to me on Monday. I was here on Monday. I hosted Cat Radio TV. Cat Radio Cafe, excuse me. Which is the 2 o'clock show in the afternoon where we played some Poisoned Arts. And where I did play a Joanna Russ radio drama.
Very nice.
And the point is that we can do all this wonderful stuff because we do have an amazing freedom here. And where we can do these wonderful, amazing things. And whether they be political, artistic, and arts are coming back to WBAI. I held an event last night at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, blah, 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 which are not BAI affiliated. They are extremely loosely affiliated with a magazine with which I have no affiliation, but a good magazine run by Kathleen Kramer and David Hartwell, and who's the editor? Kevin
you
Maroney.
You can introduce me at 1:30. Thank you.
Kevin Maroney.
Thank you.
Yeah, right. And it's only 1:22. And unless you're listening to the archive, then I don't know what time it is. But I never do. This wonderful Theodore Sturgeon event with N.K. Jemisin and Samuel R. Delaney and Noel Sturgeon. And our station manager showed up for that event, which is just like, that's a first. That really is, that somebody in power actually, you know, came showing interest in we little unpaid producers. And in an arts event, it wasn't, you know, the public forum. It's very, very, very relevant to the world today. And when you have up-and-coming writers like Nora Jemisin, Genevieve mm-hmm. Valentine, and among the world's great, great writers of all time, Samuel R. Delaney, who I will continue to point out was a staff member here at WBAI, as was Joanna Russ.
That's right.
As Ted Sturgeon wasn't a staff member here, but he hung out. I met him here.
It counts.
It counts. It really does. He did 5 radio dramas here. It counts.
That counts.
Definitely.
It really definitely counts. The idea that we can bring in that talent, that we have the eye for this kind of thing. How many other places do you know that are broadcasting regular shows about science fiction? They're either college stations or Pacifica stations. They're sadly not NPR. Not that NPR isn't great, but they're not doing this.
All things considered, it's a lie.
Okay, well, that's Margot's show. So, so I can't diss it, you know, because Adler's been doing a lot of really cool stuff on
there. She has. I love that show.
Including
I say
all
it
her
with love.
Have you been following her stuff on vampires?
Yes.
She's obsessed.
To be fair, everyone is obsessed with vampires.
153 novels in a row. Robert Adler has read 153 vampire novels in a row. If that's, you're a journalist, she's a journalist, you have to catch up.
This is why movies like Priest exist. We are hungry, hungry for vampires.
Yes, and vice versa.
That market never saturates.
Oh, very good.
Never saturates. You're very, very right.
It never does. And for fascinating reasons.
Liz has an excellent one. She told me in the bus on the way over, and I was like, that's it. That's it in a nutshell. When they're in their monster form.
Oh, when they're in their monster form, they're disgusting. We don't like them. I think werewolves are going out of style right now because when it's a werewolf, it's...
Being human. British version.
Russell Tovey. Absolutely, Russell Tovey. Love Russell Tovey.
Yes,
thank you. I was once stuck in an elevator with Russell Tovey. He's great.
Really?
At Comic-Con, you got to do it. and I didn't want to fangirl him for being human. I wanted to fangirl him for Little Dorrit. And instead, I just stood in the corner and blushed and didn't speak to him.
Wonderful.
So you fangirled him for everything.
Yes. Oh, Russell Tovey. But a werewolf, once it gets down to it, once he's in, you know, your monster form, then it becomes bestiality, and that's no fun. A vampire, when he's in his monster form, normally...
Unless you're Nora and she's a... werewolf as well, in which case it's hot. But well, theoretically.
It's still a human form, and so it's okay. It's okay. You can kind of see it. Bestiality, we kind of have a line on. Vampire sex, why not? So the problem with, what is it, Dracula with Gary Oldman, and certainly this upcoming movie with Paul Bettany, Priest. Priest should probably pay us for all this publicity that we're giving them.
Paul Bettany should come down here and fight us about all of this.
Please do.
Right now.
I'm sorry. I just had an image which is not broadcastable. Sorry, go on.
Paul Bettany, bless his heart.
Imagine him throwing cotton balls at us for some reason. Like, he doesn't want to hurt us, but he wants to make his point.
Yes, yes. Oh, goodness. But once they're in their monster form, not so fun.
The
if you pledge
Gary
right
Oldman
now,
style
the Gary Oldman
we
style.
We will have autographed cotton balls.
Not so hot. Which is why I'm really excited about Carl Urban being the very hot vampire in Priest. Excellent. Excellent choice.
He's a good actor.
He is a good actor. And he seems to have taken this in the spirit in which it was intended, which is a five-way ham-off.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Paul Bettany seems to have thought that he was actually in a Shakespeare movie that happened to be about fighting vampires on your magical motorcycle with your rosary that is actually a bunch of tiny exploding beads so you can throw your rosary and they explode everywhere.
This is going to be the greatest movie ever made.
I cannot wait. I am very sad.
It's going
to
be gory,
isn't
it?
Very
gory.
Oh,
I'm sure. Legion was disgusting.
So you're going to have to tell me about it because I'm not going to go see it.
I think I'm going to be telling everybody about Priest.
Okay. And this is because not only – I'm still introing the show. Not only is Genevieve Valentine a novelist, which Liz Story is not yet. You're not a writer,
no,
are you?
No, not a writer, but I'm a reader.
You are a reader. Are you a blogger?
I am a blogger.
Okay, and both are bloggers about movies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Particularly, at least in the case, I haven't read your blog, but I know Genevieve particularly loves bad movies.
Yes.
I do. I actually have a column at Strange Horizons where I dissect movies.
That's right.
Winter's Bone was the first one. The next one coming
I
out.
I loved your analysis of Winter's Bone.
Oh, thank you. But I'm
I haven't seen it yet, and I will only because I read your article, actually.
It was an excellent article.
Mission accomplished. That movie's awesome. The one coming up is about times when dance has been used in a speculative element in Carlos Saura's flamenco trilogy. So I can sit down, watch something good, and dissect the reasons why it is good. But it's often so much more fun to sit down and watch something that is terrible and just enjoy the train wreck that is happening in front of you. Like, there is a certain joy when a movie is bad in the right way.
You know, it's when a good movie comes out, I'll say, okay, I'll have to get to the New Yorker or whatever. You know, I'll read what some people have to say. Tony Scott, Manolo, whatever. Yeah, Anthony Lane, fine. I'll be interested. When a bad movie comes out, I have to read all the critics.
Yes.
Yes.
That's when their pens are sharpened and moistened in hell. It's
A.O. Scott's review of Gulliver's Travels was outstanding. One of the greatest reviews I've ever read.
Absolutely. You know, this is what critics live for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really terrible movies.
No one is going to argue with, well, no one in this room is going to argue with you on that. It's my favorite.
I mean, the greatest boon to theater criticism is Spider-Man.
I love every article on Spider-Man. I search for every, it's outstanding. What a train wreck.
And best of all, that cover of The New Yorker.
Oh, outstanding.
That was a classic. You know,
on some level, I agree with you, but the problem is that every article is accompanied by the fact that someone was sent to the hospital, which just makes me like clutch my pearls and feel very sorry for some poor circus aerialist who finally got their big break and then immediately, literally, got a big break.
Okay, so
that is sad.
Yeah, which brings us back to the whole circus thing.
Circus.
Let's come back to the circus.
Let's come back to the circus.
You guys talk. I'm gonna.
Okay. The title of my first novel, which comes out this week, which I still can't believe, is Mécanique, A Tale of the Circus Trisalti.
Spell it.
Mécanique. Gosh, I hope that's spelled correctly. It's 1:30 in the morning.
Yes, it is.
Well done.
She gets it.
I have a copy of it. It's my own
private copy. Is it autographed?
She read it when it was half of a Word document.
It was pretty
she
great.
She has been with this book since the beginning.
True facts. This is not signed, Genevieve.
Jeez.
You have a story in the back.
How dare you? Yes, I have a tiny little story at the end.
I'll sign it for you right now on the air. Here we go. But it is a circus novel in a very loose sense. It's a very futuristic, very fantastic circus. But it was an excuse to watch several thousand hours of circus footage starting in, you know, 1898, back when it didn't have sound and it was super choppy. And the way that the circus has developed is amazing because back then audiences just didn't expect as much as they do now. Mm-hmm. It was still beautiful to watch in its own way, and the crowd reaction was just as good as crowd reaction is for big Cirque du Soleil events now. But when you watch Cirque du Soleil now, you're genuinely afraid for their safety. Like, it has become an almost inhuman mm-hmm. requirement of people. And so every time I watch Spider-Man, I'm just like, oh, God, those poor people. What are they going to do while they're recuperating? That's their livelihood. That is now their look.
Yikes. And that's very interesting that you say that, because one of the major parts of your book is that these people are doing things that are inhuman, because they are actually, in fact.
They are, in fact, inhuman.
Inhuman.
Dun, dun, dun. Spoilers.
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 But the other thing that I really very much enjoy about this book is the post-apocalyptic feel of it, of that these are that the people that the circus is performing for never see anything beautiful, anything good, anything entertaining, anything that really pulls them out of the misery that's their life until the circus comes to town. And there's something that brings hope when you're reading this book about, isn't that wonderful that there is some entertainment?
The $20 I paid you was totally worth it.
Girl.
But it was Canadian.
No, the Canadian dollar is no higher.
Well, apparently. I have not yet read the novel, but I have sat through 3 readings from it, I believe.
One I on like the- sat through.
Sat through.
I have managed to crawl my way through. Two
were chapter 3. One was the opening, wasn't it? What did you do at KGB?
I read a related short story that is actually out now
oh,
at Fantasy
right.
Magazine.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. That's what it was.
And I love of sorts, the piano.
Ah, the study
for solo piano.
That is an outstanding.
Tell us, Genevieve, tell us a little bit about the premise of your new novel and the universe in which it occurs. I can't do that too often, folk. Sorry.
It is a post-war landscape in which people have retreated to walled city-states, and this mechanical circus is the only thing that we see traveling from city to city. Over the course of the novel, we come to realize that in addition to being more than human, there is something else going on within the circus that threatens to pull it apart. War is intensifying from without.
That's good. I mean, that's it there. That tells people what they need to know, other than the fact that she's also really just a brilliant, wonderful writer. And the way that you know this is because a lot of Genevieve Valentine's fiction is available online on various websites. So you can, no, don't turn off the radio. Just go to the website. Just go to the website. You know, you can keep the stream on your computer running and do this at the same time and read the story when Lister comes on at 3 a.m. Leave on his show and read the story then. Great background, great stuff. In the meantime, just listen to us.
In the meantime, turn to Netflix, pick something that has 1 star, and just start watching it.
But first, call WBAI and pledge.
And then you can call me, tell me what you saw, and we'll find out if I've already seen it.
Actually, we can do that. We can do that.
I'm just curious.
But we have to start with pledges.
Of course.
We have to start
Let's go.
With making that number less round. It is currently 0.
Okay.
I'm having too much fun. because this is just wonderful conversation and fabulous geeking out. And this is a joy that I didn't do too much in the 5 to 7 a.m. show, which was much more, we had fun, but it was serious constructive. In the new Hour of the Wolf, the 1:30 a.m. show, it's a lot looser, a lot more free form. I still haven't quite found what the show is, but it's a little closer to this kind of frivolity.
I dig this, though, like a frivolous roundtable about geeky movies and TV, that's nowhere else.
Outstanding.
Come here, pledge for this station, and keep this going so that you can call and tell me that I'm totally wrong about Tron and Priest.
Yeah, so what you do is first, because we only have, another hour and 25 minutes in which to do it, call now, make a pledge. Listener-sponsored radio is based on the idea that you're going to do what I just said. It's based on the idea that you like what you're hearing, you think that it needs support, you don't want it to go away. It's on several levels. The local level, the show. Like the show? Call and pledge. Secondary level, how many kind of radio stations would support this kind of a show? Maybe you can find a blog that does this kind of thing, a podcast, something like that. Yeah. How many of them are broadcasted? You can hear them in cabs. This radio station allows for that. Add the idea of the dare I say it, bizarro politics that we often have. I'm, of course, referring to the guests and not our brilliant hosts. Then can't even do a straight face on the radio, for God's sake. The idea that the freedom exists, that it was created at Pacifica Radio in the late 1940s by Lou Hill and brought forth, donated a whole radio station at 99.5 FM, 50,000 watt radio station donated to the Pacifica Foundation by its rather interesting owner, Louis Schweitzer, for this purpose. But, you know, he didn't supply us with, we're now in our 52nd year of broadcasting as a Pacifica station. It's expensive to run a station in New York, and we're doing so many things, and we're not barely surviving. We're operating on deficit. Two out of the five Pacific stations are on deficit. We have stabilized. We're no longer losing money annually, but we're stable. But at least one other Pacific station is losing money. Pacifica has gone through its whatever. If we're going to survive past a year from now, we have to do very well indeed. And this is just reality. This is, you know, something I hate dealing with, but it's reality. And so all that we are asking for is $25. $25 makes you a subscriber to WBAI. It allows you to vote in elections that we have for board, our listener board. There are staff members and their listed staff vote for staff, listeners vote for listeners, et cetera, et cetera. It's a mess out there. I don't like getting involved in that stuff, but it's democracy at work. It's democracy now or then. We do a show called Democracy Now. Anyway. The idea is it's unique. We have done major science fiction programming on this radio station since we were created. Our music director was a fellow by the name of Anthony Boucher, co-founder of the magazine of fantasy and science fiction, but he was our music director. He was followed by a fellow by the name of Barrett Searles, who later on became a critic at the aforementioned FNSF and Asimov's.
I believe so.
I think it was Asimov's. But first, at a time when radio drama was dead, he brought in the likes of Joanna Russ, Samuel R. Delaney, Theodore Sturgeon, Thomas M. Dish to be creating radio dramas for him. He was also the first person to, in 1963, do a regular show called The New Symposium of News and Views for Homosexuals. As he said, homosexuals. And 1963, there has never before that been electronic broadcast, any kind of broadcast about gay people on any, you know, on anything other than a smearing basis before Baird Searles brought it to this radio station because of listener sponsorship. He creates this kind of stuff and all these fabulous radio dramas. It gets traction again in the 70s to a limited extent. And people like Janet Coleman and David Dozer come in doing Poisoned Arts. And we had Timothy Jerome with David Rapkin and Peter Zanger and Charles Potter doing stuff like The Radio, it was called, everything from The Cask of Amontillado to The Brazen Locked Room by Isaac Asimov, who then came here on the station and stuff like that. Fast forward, Timothy Jerome acts in, oh, but 3 weeks ago in a new radio drama by Ellen Kushner that we broadcast, The Witches of Lublin, about women klezmer, a fantasy about women klezmer in 18th century Poland, which we broadcast, New York to premiere broadcast. We have the freedom to do this because of listener sponsorship. We have the ability to think what is interesting. What do people really want to hear? Not what is in vogue, but rather what is good, mm-hmm. What is fun, what is entertaining, what is important, what, you know, not right-wing hate radio, hopefully not left-wing hate radio. That was the 80s here. But the well, it was. And But simply, and even then, I can defend some of that, except the anti-Semitism. But that didn't kill anything. That was those people. And there is a place for all of it, because it's talk, it's thinking. And which is also, by the way, what speculative fiction is about. When you hear Genevieve describing this novel, this is, you know, we're not talking Carnival. Have to get back to what you thought of that. It's
dun, dun, dun.
Liz, you made.
I'm curious. I never actually watched it myself, but I'm curious what Genevieve thinks.
Yeah, I'm curious as well. I'm curious as well. We'll get to that in just a moment. This is original thinking. This is a place which takes the mind and brings it to a new place. The kind of writing that people who I like to bring. I've got the best freaking job in the world. I know cool people because I say, hey, I've got a radio show. And then I get to bring those people on the air. And I have to show you a picture. I am amazed at the people that I have been so lucky sitting in this chair, even just as an engineer, have had pass through. And as host of this radio show that Margot Adler created some umpteen years ago, 3 decades plus, almost 20, the idea that I can do a show about my passion of science fiction and general geekery and be the nerd that I am, sort of openly and act it out on the air, is fabulous. But now I'm asking you to pay for it. But that's exactly what I'm doing, because you're listening. Because I happen to know that you enjoy it. Because I happen to know that through these years, for God knows what reason, people continue to listen to this show. You write into it. You tell me about it. I was so thrilled last night. Somebody handed me his new novel. We had a nice turnout of about 55, 60 people there. We've had more on occasion. We've had less. In the last month alone between these airwaves, a new radio drama by Ellen Kushner, a birthday party, a 90th birthday party for Carol M. Schwiller. Lev Grossman read for us. Barbara Krasnoff. I'm not even remembering what I had just on this show. And this is just in the last 30 days. In June, I'll have a guy named Michael Swanwick here who's going to talk to you. And if you don't know him, well, you're in for a treat. And tonight we have Genevieve Valentine, but it's a pitching morning, so we do and we don't. But what I ask you, and we'll have her back often, assuming she's willing, but for the show to exist, for the show to be here, we need your pledge. We need your call. 212-209-2950 is the way that you do it. 212-209-2950. Make a call now. Get it rolling now. See, I'm used to my old format is that I'm on the air from 5 to 7 a.m. And you start at 5 a.m. It's like mellow and cool and all that. And by 7 a.m. you're ranting. You're raving. And I'm raving. I'm frothing at the mouth. 212-209. Well, now it's the other way around. Now it's still before 2 a.m. Now it's like, you're awake now. I don't know about an hour from now, but right now you're awake. 212-209-295. I'll call now. Okay, I have to start crazed and then calm down. Not going to happen. But please call. Please make that pledge. 212-209-2950. I'm not going to get off the shtick, obviously, until we get at least a few calls coming in. 212-209-2950. I want to hear what Genevieve thinks about Carnival. So does Liz, I know. And we're going to do it because I can just turn off the mics and we'll find out. You want to find out? Call now. Pledge now. 212-209-2950. You see, that's the other technique of pitching. It's not just having a premium. It's ransom. We're not going to do anything interesting. We're not going to do anything good until you call and pledge. Yes, you. Don't. Yes, you're looking at the radio. I saw you. I saw you looking at the radio. Yes, you. You're the one that I'm talking to. It's you. No, no, no. Not that shadow behind you. That's a Sturgeon story. No, it's you. You're the one who's going to, you know, make that call now on your... You have a landline? Oh, that's nice. I remember landlines. Fine.
pick up the phone, dial the number. But no, no, that's a different thing. That's out of help. Go to the window, Leo McKern. Eleanor Braun was fabulous in that. 212-209. I'm getting nods from Liz and Genevieve. I've done my job. 212-209-2950. Please call now. Please pledge now. Any pledge is appreciated. Do you want a premium? Do you want something spiffy? We actually have hundreds, but you need to talk to the people who are answering the phone, and we have a few of them who are sitting by, ready to take your call. Wake them up. Let them know that you're out there. 212-209-2950. $25 is the minimum to become a subscriber to keep this fabulous thing going on that is listener-sponsored radio that exists in its purest form here at Pacifica Radio in at our five stations and our umpteen affiliates. And survival, I know how many times you've heard this over the years, survival continues to be an issue. We have all different kinds of crises, and this recession has hit us as much as anybody else. To run a commercially licensed radio station, which we are in New York, we're not 82.1 or something. We're 99.5 FM. We're the third transmitter down of the Empire State Building. Of the FM frequency. It costs, the rent in that room alone is staggering. And you're listening to us through that, possibly through the internet. And by the way, that doesn't come free to us either. How do we pay for this stuff? By asking you to donate. 212-209-2950. We have not yet gotten any calls.
How long are you going to wait before you ask what I think of Carnival?
What did you think of Carnival?
I feel the same way about Carnival that I currently feel about a Game of Thrones, which is it looks...
Ooh.
It looks,
well, okay, no, that's not unfair.
It looks totally right. The actors are doing a fantastic job. Individual scenes are great. Lines of dialogue are great. Something is not coming together. And I watched a full season of Carnival and thought, nice.
The Ronald D. Moore season or the second season?
First season.
The Ronald D. Moore season, yeah.
And I thought, nice. And I'm watching Game of Thrones, and for the most part, I think, nice. But it... Something is missing. The first episode infuriated me.
Of Game of Thrones? Or?
Yes.
Yeah.
As someone who has not read the books, it can take a lot of license and I will not notice. But the fan uproar over this was so sudden, so unanimous, mm-hmm. and so loud that I am really surprised that HBO did it and would love to know the reason why. Which is that, spoilers, they turn a sex scene in the first book that is specifically designed to be as consensual as possible into a flat out, she is weeping the entire time rape scene.
Ooh.
I do not understand why, because the relationship in the books is supposed to be one of great tenderness, great affection, great equality. And
doesn't play as well on TV. They want violence. They want the sex.
But the thing is, the books have plenty of violence. The books have plenty of sex. I don't understand why
they want
why
violence
would...
mixed with the sex for some reason.
Well, that's an issue that goes far beyond HBO, those books, or anything else.
I never understood in the second season of Rome how much rape there was. I mean, obviously, of course, there was rampant rape in Rome Actual. But the actual season, it was sickening. There was one episode where I think like six people got raped, and it was like, wow, I'm watching this I'm entertained. This is entertainment. Thanks a lot, HBO. Thanks.
Yeah, but that is it. I mean, HBO has Rome and Game of Thrones. Showtime has The Borgias, and
which also had marital rape.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, exactly. That's and I should mention I don't watch these many of these because I am put off by some of this stuff to the point where it's going to keep me awake in an unpleasant manner. Mm-hmm. And if something is going to give me, you know, the images that I cannot erase from my brain, you know, the retinal scars or whatever that this stuff causes, That's not entertainment to me. And there are people who have, you know, stronger wills or stomachs or more clinical views of it who can watch this and all that. I'm not one of them. I still have trauma from watching the trailer for Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, which I saw when I was like, you know, 6 or 7 years old. That's burned in my brain. So
I do want to footnote this by saying, no, you make a good point, and I understand what you're saying.
It's not even a point, it's just who I am. Sorry. Go on.
Occasionally, I do feel like it is actually not necessarily justified by the narrative, but you look at it and you realize that this is a text that is going to actively engage with what it is doing.
Mm.
Robin McKinley's book, Deer Skin, mm-hmm. which is largely about a woman's recovery from an assault.
Yes.
The movie Irreversible, which came out a few years ago. Which filmed a horrible stranger rape scene in a single take that was absolutely grueling.
Mm-hmm.
The rape scene in Boys Don't Cry, which mm-hmm. was filmed to be exactly as like terrifying and disgusting as rape is.
Yeah.
And those scenes got so much negative press for being more graphic than they needed to be when they're no more
when
graphic.
When they actually weren't.
They're no
those
more,
I could watch, believe it or not. At least Boys Don't Cry, yeah.
They're no more graphic than any other...
HBO Entertainment.
Or Showtime Entertainment. And many scenes of that nature are filmed in a very titillating way. And part of that is just because the language of cinema is, let's make this look good. The problem is, that should not look good.
No.
Ever.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, and by the way, how did you enjoy that beheading? these horrible, irrevocable, ultra-violent scenes, which, you know, that's part of it as well, because, you know, it's what they did on the Tudors, after all. They even killed off characters in the Tudors that died, but in other manners, so that they could make it more graphic.
Yes.
They really did that, and the Sam Neill character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, and that's also a mistake of thinking that in order to raise the dramatic stakes, you must behead the person, mm-hmm. which not necessarily the case.
Yeah, so it's very bizarre, but it is what they do, and. For a while, I called it the Shogun syndrome when I read and then watched Shogun. The miniseries, mm-hmm. whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
you always knew that there was going there would be some hot sex scene, which was always a clue that not only was a violent scene to follow, mm-hmm. but you knew how violent that scene was going to be, dependent on how hot the sex was. The hotter the sex, the more violent the scene that would follow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've changed that. They've made it a lot better. They make sure that the sex and violence today are in the same scene. They've combined the two so that sex is no longer an act of love, but an act of violence. Why don't you get this, Genevieve?
My bad.
Why? Yeah, really. It's like, you know, these people are trying to compress time. They're trying to make it easier. So what they've done is that they've taken any and all what form used to be acts of love and turned sex into an act of hatred and violence, thereby making it better, more concise television.
The fan uproar after the sex scene in True Blood, where they're both vampires,
oh
where
God.
He twists her head in mid sex, but she's still alive and still.
And it's after she's
it.
Compelled him to do it because she made him a vampire, and so mm-hmm. the blood bond is such that he cannot refuse her. So she demands sex from him, and then he's so disgusted by the process that he. Turns her head around on her spine.
I can't even listen to
every level of
Adler,
that scene.
Adler, you watch this stuff, Adler? Sorry.
My favorite thing about it, though, is that, I mean, it was a trending topic on Twitter. Like, the fan uproar was huge. Like, people really reacted to it. And unfortunately, in their reaction, it means True Blood only has to raise the stakes.
That's right.
What's going to happen?
No pun intended.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
What's gonna happen next? They have to do something to top that.
Really?
Another show I don't watch.
Yeah.
Good call.
Likewise, for similar reasons. Adler loves it, but she, as I said, she's
this
obsessed.
Vampire thing.
But, well, yeah. But both good and bad, and well, she's writing a book, so. So we'll give her a pass on that, and she loves the bad stuff as well. You know, it's just. It's fascinating to listen to her and watch her go through the process. I get to go over to her house and listen to this, and I'm also trying to indoctrinate her into. I finally got her into Buffy. I cannot believe how many years it took to get her
That's
to watch
a long time.
Buffy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she was raising a kid and having a life and all that, and producing
NPR.
You know, bureau chief of NPR. Who cares? Watch this bad movie. Anyway,
it's only seven seasons.
Wait, did you show
television.
Her the TV show or the movie?
The TV show.
Yeah.
Have you shown her the movie?
No.
She needs to see that movie.
She really does. She
it's
really
amazing.
Does.
Amazing.
Paul Reubens.
It is amazing.
Paul Reubens does a wonderful turn in that film.
Rutger Hauer. Fanning myself. Yes.
Fangirl.
That man.
Fangirl.
Super,
She's
super.
Really actually fanning.
Lady
is
Hawk?
Good in that. Lady Hawk.
Lady Hawk.
Blade Runner is my ultimate.
That's fair.
Okay.
But Lady Hawk, I feel like, gets a bad rap for no reason.
I'll tell you why it gets a bad rap. That soundtrack, that is one of the worst soundtracks of the 80s.
I'm not going to argue with you.
True.
I still think that the movie gets perpetually
And remind me
underrated.
To tell you how I told Matthew Broderick, do not go to Hollywood and make films. I did.
I don't think he listened.
No.
Yeah, and good for him.
I don't think he listened.
We were working on a play.
He was like, listen, someone has to make the Komodo Dragon movie, and it's going to be me.
Well, it was actually, I like that movie.
You're free to.
The Komodo Dragon movie? Yes. I thought it was clever. Not as good as it could have been, but it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Marlon
Brando was good.
Related to the Komodo Dragon.
Related to the Komodo Dragon. The Sci-Fi Channel put out this movie called Cobra versus Komodo Dragon. No, it's Komodo Dragon versus Cobra. So we call it, my friends and I call it KVC. And we watch one scene every Friday. So every Friday we watch Fringe, and then we watch one scene from KBC. It is one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. Large Cobra.
Intentionally so.
Large Cobra versus the large Komodo dragon.
Sure.
And including some of the worst film techniques you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Really bad acting from people they probably pulled off the street in Australia.
Did you see their version of John Carter of Mars?
I did, and it was glorious. It was one of the worst things I've ever seen. It was amazing.
I mean, was KBC worse than that?
I have not seen. I mean, there are depths.
They did a movie called Aztec Rex that sounds like it is about the same quality. Look at your face, Aztec Rex. You saw it, right?
I saw the commercials.
Okay. I have seen Aztec Rex. I saw it twice. John Carter of Mars is not as bad as Aztec Rex. Because at least in John Carter...
But did Aztec Rex have Tracy Lords?
She was not the worst thing about John Carter of Mars.
No, she wasn't. And that's saying something.
She treated that movie like it was an actual movie in which she was going to have facial expressions and change her inflection at certain times to show that she was having an emotion.
What?
Which is more than anyone else in that movie did. The people who were in face makeup maybe get a pass, but not really. And it was Antonio Sabato Jr. in the lead role, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah.
Antonio Sabato Jr.
I was not going to watch that. I don't watch this junk.
You can't not watch it.
I was passing through. Somehow my television landed on the SIFI channel, on the syphilis channel.
The most dangerous night of television.
Really. In so many ways. And I could not watch it. It was, oh my God.
Yep.
It was so appalling.
Yep.
And I've just, by the way, finished rereading. I'm up Princess of Mars. And I need to re-finish that series before the movie, the real
Looking forward to
movie.
That. What's going to happen? Is Disney's doing it?
It's Pixar.
It's Pixar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's not known whether it's going to be emblazoned with Pixar or with Disney or with Touchstone or, you know, what imprint. It is directed by Andrew Stanton of WALL-E cleverness. It is live action.
Ooh.
Don't forget that. It's a live action film using Pixar techniques and all of that. So it's a total, which is one of the reasons they're not sure if they're branding it Pixar. Also, I'm not sure how much John Lasseter and Steve Jobs have to do with this actual movie, which is part of the branding of a Pixar thing. But Andrew Stanton, I think at this point, has proven himself worthy of the Pixar name. Whatever it is, it's a script by Michael Chabon. I mean, this has potential.
Definitely.
This has... People have been waiting for a John Carter movie since Bob Clampett started working on one.
And then they got the sci-fi one, and they weren't happy. That movie's
have
so
you ever
good,
seen
you guys. Listening audience, the movie's amazing. I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix Instant Watch because they couldn't convince anyone to actually buy it.
Actually.
See it.
Yeah. Oh, the syphilis one? No, not yet.
Oh, no, it's on Netflix Instant.
It's on Netflix?
It's in my queue.
Oh.
You can't watch that movie just once.
Okay, I'll have to, one second, I've got my thing here, okay, I'll have to cue that up, okay, because, and this is about the right size screen, I hope you all at home can hear it, you don't need a larger screen than 3.5 inches.
To do justice to the beautiful cinematography
of the
Sci-Fi Channel
B
team.
Yes.
Yeah, I think I can do the special effect. I got an app on this that Nora Jemison gave me that can do them properly. So
I watched the first 5 minutes of Battle for Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Not actually Battlefield : Los Angeles.
Right.
It was 10 times better than the Hollywood film in 5 minutes.
They had a straight-up old school B movie with Nina Dobrev from Vampire Diaries, and it was called something like My Neighbor is a Werewolf, and it was straight up B movie. Everyone was aware of what was going on. There's like a vaguely sexy, vaguely menacing neighbor. Naturally, he is a werewolf. Naturally, he would like Nina Dobrev to become a werewolf also. Mm-hmm. She's dealing with her younger brother. There's a young man who I believe is in the service industry, sort of the I drive the hot dog truck of Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead, but not quite.
Not quite? Okay.
And it was wonderful. When they embrace what they're doing, it's great.
There's nothing like a good B-movie.
There's nothing like a good B-movie, but that had minimal CGI, and it really helps. Because when they break out the CGI, they have $5, and it shows.
I once had a corporate life. I was once a network manager at Citibank, the corporate side, interface design group for computers. We had a fellow who was an amazing person, who would stand in my office full. He was either a vice president or assistant vice president of the bank. Held for a short time. I was an assistant vice president. God help me. God help everybody. And he would stand there in his business suit. Most people wore jeans, but this one day, for whatever reason, this guy, he stood there. He was a dancer. And so he would casually stand in somebody's office in what they call the number one position.
First position?
Mm-hmm. First position. Thank you.
I know it well.
Ouch. This is the one where your feet are 180 degrees from each other.
Oh, that's fifth.
Correct.
That's fifth position?
First?
Oh,
second,
no, you're first.
Third, fourth.
Okay, five, no, yeah. So
I'm a terrible ballerina.
So it's first position. He would
I
just be sitting
one
in.
Year.
So here's a guy who's, you know, dressed to the nines, perfectly corporate, except when he's standing and talking to you, he's in first position. So if you just happen to notice that. That's one thing. And he would stand there and tell me how he wouldn't watch a movie that had more than 2 stars in its ratings. Mm-hmm. Because after a busy, grueling day in the corporate world, when in your mind you're really a dancer, and you go home and you need to let go, you need for your mind to have a release. If it has more than 2 stars, it's asking too much of you. What do you think?
I think that for an individual that can have merit, I also think that's a very dangerous road to go down because then you're talking about the willful disregard of anything that asks anything intellectual of you. And I think there's plenty of that going on in this country already.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely do understand there is a long list of things in my Netflix queue that have 4 stars that you have to sit down, prepare time to watch them, prepare time to digest what it's about, analyze it, be sad, reach for tissues, make a cup of coffee as you weep.
I still haven't seen Schindler's List. mm-hmm. for that very reason.
You haven't sat through Showa in one sitting?
Schindler's List. I need to see Aslan versus Voldemort. It needs to happen, but have to prepare oneself.
I'd Aslan watch... versus Voldemort.
If anything,
I'm waiting for that one. Crossover, yes.
Because it is Liam Neeson versus Ralph Fiennes.
Rafe.
Oh, Rafe. God.
Rafe.
Great. Now he's never going to come here and talk to us. Way to mispronounce.
The way, this is WBAI in New York City, as if you couldn't tell, broadcasting at 99.5 FM in New York City and something casting over WBAI.org, stream.WBAI.org, or if you've already missed the show, it's at archive.WBAI.org. But then you knew that, or you wouldn't have been able to hear the archive. Okay, let's not go there. That's Stephen Moffat territory. But... My name is Jim Freund. With me is Liz Story and Genevieve Valentine, and we are here to geek. But you are there to allow us to geek because you're going to call and pledge, right? This is listener-sponsored radio. We exist. We exist by boon of your call. But you know what? I'm going to take a musical break. It is time for a little sorbet. Auditory sorbet. Now let's see. Launch cloud player. God. Log in. Do I remember this login? If not, you see, I have my hard drive with all my songs, but I didn't bring the bleeping USB cable. So instead, I said I was geeking. And so instead, I'm trying this other technique, which means, oh my God, I remembered my password. No, I'm not remembering my password here. This is a public computer at WBAI. What kind of a fool But look, we're getting pledges.
Amazing. Thank you, New York. It's wonderful.
This is what's called tally lag, which is to say that the calls are coming in, but they get busy. And they don't always have the ability. And I see that we're getting a call, but on the wrong number. Because I've probably been saying the wrong number. It's 212-209-2950. I see we're getting a call at 212-209-2900. Ah, that person hung up there. And let's see if it comes up over there instead. It was on my right, now it's to the left. And at WBAI, everything is to the left. So we're going to move that phone call over, hopefully raise just a little bit more money. And where is it you live, Liz?
I'm from Austin, Texas.
You're from Austin. We don't have a station there.
No.
We're in Houston.
Oh, very good.
We're in Houston with KPFT.
Houston has excellent radio. Austin, no.
Yeah. We have KPFT. Austin has a lot of great writers, though.
Excellent.
A lot of great science fiction writers, mm-hmm. too, come out of Austin. I've had a few on this show. But, okay, it's time. Now I see that Genevieve's coming back. It's time for a musical break. Now I finally figured out how to do it. So here, then, is one of my favorite songs about movies. In the words of the great Daffy, let's try that again.
She looks so weak and fragile as That's why she tried to be so hard. But they turned her into a princess, and they sat her on a throne. But she turned her back on stardom, because she wanted to be alone. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you've hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. Some who succeeded and some who suffered in vain. Such a lonely life. If you covered him with garbage, George Saunders would still have style. And if you stamped on Mickey Rooney, he would still turn round and smile. But please don't tread on dearest Marilyn, 'cause she's not very tough. She should have been made. She was only made of flesh and blood. You can see all the stars as you walk down Hollywood Boulevard. Some that you recognize, some that you hardly even heard of. People who worked and suffered and struggled for fame. And some who suffered in vain. Everybody's a dreamer, and everybody's a star, and everybody's in showbiz. It doesn't matter who you are. And those who are successful, be always on your guard. Success walks hand in hand with failure along Hollywood Boulevard. I wish my life was a non-stop Hollywood movie show. A fantasy world of celluloid villains and heroes. Because celluloid heroes never feel any. Celluloid heroes never feel any pain. And celluloid heroes never really die.
The Kinks. And speaking of the Kinks, this is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored, but Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica radio broadcasting at 99.5 FM. My name is Jim Freund. I did that already. The program is Hour of the Wolf. With me are Liz Story and Genevieve Valentine, bloggers all, writer of great science fiction, at least one, with a new novel out on Friday called Mechanique from, who's the press?
Prime.
Prime Press, P-R-I-M-E, press, a good small press.
They're excellent.
Obviously one of discriminating taste.
Mm-hmm. Right up until they picked me.
What?
No, stop it.
Stop it. Stop it.
No, they have published a lot of great people.
They really have. They've done.
Yep.
I love the small presses in science fiction. They are what makes the worlds go round, as it were.
They're the indie movies of publishing.
Thank you.
Bringing it in a circle.
That's exactly what it is. And what are we talking about this morning? Well, what we're hoping to do is to raise money for the radio station itself. And I only have two opportunities, by the way, to do this. That is this week and in 2 weeks. I'll be on 2 weeks from 2 to 5 a.m. And frankly, at that time, I'm afraid I need to eulogize. One of my favorites, Joanna Russ, died last week. And she was very important to this radio station, and she was very important to the world. And if you know why, I don't have to explain. And if you don't know why, you have to tune in. But Joanna Russ was special. She was very, very special. I noticed at the event we did yesterday, the tribute to Theodore Sturgeon, Samuel R. Delaney was dressed in black, and I know why. It was for her. They both published their best known novels in the same year, Dahlgren and The Female Man. Both emerged at that time, and they were both writers of the new wave of the 60s, and he with a gay black viewpoint, she with the feminist viewpoint, one of the first women to really stand out there. I mean, yes, Le Guin is Le Guin. And, you know, saying Le Guin, you know, some people say Voldemort. You can say Voldemort. I can't say Le Guin because that is the name of the goddess. You know, it's Le Guin. Worst interview I ever did on the air was my first interview with Le Guin, where I hadn't ever met her or anything. It was a phone interview. I don't do many phone interviews. And it was just like, I was substituting an evening show, actually, for Adler on her show, Unstuck in Time. It was 11 p.m. in New York. And I have her on the show, and I just, the whole interview was me saying, like, gosh, you're Ursula K. Le Guin. She's saying, who is this again? And that was about it. About a year later, she came to New York and actually read at a New York Review of Science Fiction reading.
Nice.
Courtesy Joe Monti.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Monti was one who, in fact, she read with Carol M. Schwiller.
Very nice.
Yeah, nice double feature. Nice double feature. And she came to the station to be interviewed and hopefully didn't remember the phone thing. And I had her booked for an hour. She stayed for four.
Oh, wow.
And then I could do a good interview, which is how I learned, Jim, phone interviews, not your long suit, especially not with the most incredible writers in the world. Why do I say, why am I, I'm not just cavilling. I'm not just boasting. What I'm doing is I'm saying we do good radio here at WBAI. We remember radio. We value it. We do things on the radio that people cannot do on podcasts. Phone calls. Interaction. Truly extemporaneous kind of things. Radio will continue to be a going medium. It may move from airwaves to other other technology platforms. But the premise of what radio is and what it does will continue. And we need to make sure that we continue with it, because if not, even with the amazing explosion that is the internet and audio casting and podcasting and all that stuff going on, Pacifica is special. No, not like Special Olympics. We're special because we're good. Sorry, Genevieve. no, I'm not. I digress myself. I'm amazing that I can do this to myself, right? The point is, folk, we need you to call. We need you to pledge. We need you to put out money for the radio station, for the concept of listener-sponsored audio or radio, for the assurance that we will be there in your future, in your children's future, and in and that a radio show that celebrates speculative fiction, and a station that creates new radio drama and broadcasts radio drama from other sources like PRX with stuff produced by such people as Ellen Kushner, et cetera, so forth. You listen, you know. And the cavelling, the talking about the people like Le Guin, Joanna Russ, Samuel R. Delaney, and dare I say it, yes, Genevieve Valentine. Yeah. Yeah, I will. I will. I am so thrilled that this is a terrible that a lot of the guests who I have on the air today were not alive when I started this show. But what it means is that hopefully I'm picking up on what's going on today. New York is such a wonderful place to be. And to be sitting in this seat, to be able to be the curator and recordist of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, the recordist of the KGB Fantastic Fiction Readings, etc. and so forth, gives me the ability to be. New York is the epicenter of publishing. Everybody comes here. Everybody's going to be here in 2 weeks for the Booksellers Expo of America.
That's going to be nuts.
It's going to be nerds. It's going to be utterly nerds. There's one event alone at the New York Public Library on the Wednesday of that week with Kat Valenti, Scott Westerfeld, Lev Grossman, and some other throwaway typewriter. I'll get the details and tell.
Is it John Scalzi?
It's John Scalzi.
That's gonna pack the joint.
Mm-hmm. Now they have moved the venue twice. They were like, "Oh, it's some sci-fi thing. You know, we'll just put it in a back room it's the public library." At 6 o'clock, the Wednesday, 2 Wednesdays from now. That's when it is, to be precise. I didn't even have to look it up.
I always like stories like that that prove that science fiction is not a little ghetto of publishing, that science fiction is actually a hugely popular mainstream thing with an engaged audience. That always makes me feel good.
It is. And yet it's hardly represented in the media.
True.
Which media?
Ooh.
The media.
But define the media, because we have HBO's Game of Thrones, we have Starz doing Camelot, mm-hmm. we have...
Is there any spec fic element to Camelot? I haven't watched it yet.
There is. It's all very faint because they're trying to keep it gritty and real by putting a startled 12-year-old in the role of King Arthur for some reason mm-hmm. I will never understand as long as I live. But there is definitely an otherworldly speculative element. There's a lot of witchcraft. There's all that stuff. We have the Vampire Diaries. We have Fringe. V just went off the air because it was very bad, but they tried.
But it is very impressive that Fox renewed Fringe, because Fringe's ratings have gone down.
It's J.J. Mm-hmm. Abrams. They'll do whatever to keep him happy. You know, if it's Joss Whedon, canceled. But, you know, J.J. Abrams, he makes money. Firefly didn't make money.
Nope. Sadly.
You know, so Dollhouse didn't make money.
Dollhouse was terrible.
Uh-oh. Fight.
Dollhouse got better once it found out that there was fire under its feet.
Yeah.
got suddenly, it was a terrible show.
Now, you see, I actually, I'm the only one. And my partner, Barbara, was, you know, why are you watching this, Jim? And it's not just because it's Faith the Vampire Huntress, which it wasn't, but because I saw that it was building. I saw that there were elements in the first five episodes that were leading. And with Whedon, it's always the sixth episode. Has anybody noticed? Of course they have. When all of a sudden it blows open. And that's what happened on Dollhouse. He did the same thing on Firefly, but of course they changed the sequence. Mm-hmm. And then and Firefly, you know, they, where they didn't broadcast the pilot and right. all that. And I was saying, wait, it's going to get good. Now, the problem is that it was on Fox, you know, which is a problem for any show.
And it was a problematic premise.
It is a problematic premise, but I think Whedon knew where it was going.
Yeah.
And I and you know, trust Joss, you know, it's, and I did, and I think that there was a payoff. I think that it did work ultimately
at the end of season 2.
Oh, I thought the best episode of the entire series, I thought, was, maybe it was the eighth episode. There was the one where they had the four distinct stories where all of a sudden everything that had been going on in the series before that came together. There were four distinct stories and they all merged at one time. It was either the sixth or the eighth episode. And I sat there and saying, okay, that one episode was work of genius. And my partner agreed with me. She said, okay, that one, but that didn't justify the 6 or 7 hours that came before it.
I do not subscribe to the trust Joss philosophy.
Well, I don't either. He has screwed up a number of times. Mm-hmm. It is true. It is true. But I liked what I appreciated some of what he was doing with that show, especially when he finally got down to the bleeping arc.
Mm-hmm. And when he started giving...
You'll like Game of Thrones. If you like shows that take 6 or 8 episodes to really get going, you'll love Game of Thrones.
Maybe so. We were talking about this off the air. I'm a big George Martin fan. I like his television as well. Anybody remember the second Twilight Zone? The Twilight Zone of the mid-80s, in which he did a lot of Zelazny and a number of things. He did very good adaptations on that. And who was that? That was George R.R., a.k.a. Railroad Martin, who was involved in that show. He was working on a series called Doorways that had a lot of promise to it that I always assumed, given the premise, had to do with Zelazny's Doorways in the Sand. And which would make a great premise for a TV show. And we do not see enough Zelazny or Zelazny-like material in the movies. Best movie ever, the unmade movie Lord of Light. Are you listening, Pixar? right? No, you know, don't know the book.
I actually want to go back to George R. R. Martin writing for TV.
Okay.
He was also very involved in Beauty and the Beast, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. I had forgotten that. Somebody pointed that out to me recently.
There was... Again, a lot of really great stuff that, because it was the 80s, was not executed as well as it could have been because everyone's shoulder pads were too big for them to actually make it happen. But there were definitely some elements there where I can see that they have carried through in his work very nicely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but Doorways failed. Pilot season was over. George bought New Mexico and moved onto some... to mm-hmm. a nice place there outside of Albuquerque. Actually, I have a Fannish friend who moved and is not his neighbor. I guess it's, you know, 20 miles away in New Mexico.
Little House on the Prairie neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. And they're old-time friends. And I knew George way back when he lived in Chicago and was very present in the Fannish circuit. He used to be a fixture at science fiction conventions. And I knew him then. And I've always loved his writing, especially his science fiction writing and all that. But I picked up Game of Thrones the first novel in the Eisend Sturman Drang
fire, whatever.
And I could
start dissing people at 2:30.
I couldn't do it. It was sword and sorcery gore. It was, you know, commercial Conan.
And as I mentioned off the air, the series has been relatively bloodless, both in the way that they're minimizing the gore and in the way that while everything is being done correctly, some spark has yet to
ignite.
And I feel like it could happen at any moment, and then it is a show that I will love. But in the meantime, I kind of watch thinking, and... And there's something to be said for taking your time to position the characters and do everything right. But it suffers from the same problem that Boardwalk Empire had, where it looked fantastic. They got the best cast of actors they possibly could, gave them wonderful scripts to work with, and for the first four episodes, nothing happened.
Yeah.
Actually, Martin Scorsese's episode was one of my least favorites of the season.
Really?
I'm just going to say it. Yep.
Yeah, I didn't watch it too far past that. I figure I have gotten into binge viewing, okay? I've gotten into the Netflix way of the world, which is to say that I'll wait sometimes for a series to be over and then watch the whole thing in one night. It's I love being able to watch a show episode 1 one night, episode 2 the next, and so on and so forth. And if I'm feeling really good, 2 episodes in one night. It is so, unless it's a show where I cannot wait, like Doctor Who or Torchwood or something, you know, or Being Human. Although I still haven't watched the end of the 3rd season of Being Human.
It will rip your heart out.
I'm told have
tissues. Literally. I know what happens.
Have tissues ready.
Spoiler.
Wow. Okay. Spoiler. I mean, do we really think that any characters won't be there later on? I mean, how many times can you kill Captain Jack until you finally make him immortal?
I never believed it when Fox Mulder was dead. Never, never. And yeah, he died probably 7 times on that show.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they killed the Doctor in episode 1, season 32 of Doctor Who.
Like he's really dead.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the 19th Doctor comes back and kills the 11th Doctor, who then turns into Tom Baker. And by the way, Sarah Jane isn't even dead. Only Liz Sladen has passed, but Sarah Jane
lives forever.
She does. She really does. K-9, I'm not so sure about. But binge viewing.
One good thing about Tron Legacy is that it made me watch all of Babylon 5 in about 3 weeks, thanks to Netflix. That was binge viewing.
I'm going to have a hipster moment and say I watched Babylon 5 when you had to wait a week between shows because it was still on the air. Thank you.
Yes, and that's pre-bingeable times.
It was pre-anything. I basically,
Could you VCR it? Did we have VCRs back? I guess we did.
Name. Season 4, episode 1. The name of that episode was.
Oh my god!
I just recently watched,
and I was in high school. Sidebar.
Okay, they look like two lawyers at a congressional hearing.
The Garibaldi one.
Okay, it's.
We're gonna go with whatever happened to Mr. Garibaldi.
No.
Damn. That was episode 2 of season 4.
That was. I believe that was.
You lied to me.
Damn it.
She sat here in the studio 10 seconds ago and lied to me. What was it called?
Hour of the Wolf. Next question. Oh,
we have failed you.
Indeed. And
That's
there was a reference in that episode of Hour of the Wolf to where one. And by the way, he defines Hour of the Wolf, gets it all wrong. Gets it completely wrong. What's her name? The captain. The second in command.
Ivanova.
Yes. She's the one who explains, in the middle of the night when you're thinking like this and like that, it's the hour of the wolf and, you know, things happen. Sorry, no. This radio show is named after what Veronica Seamus immediately Seamus says, well, it's Vargteamen. Well, of course. A Vargteamen is a Swedish concept based on an old Roman concept, the wolf time, the time between night and dawn. Okay, it is the morning twilight, which, by the way, in Sweden can be 8 hours long. And
wolves everywhere in Sweden, doing just as they please.
There's wolves everywhere. There's a very, very long twilight. Yeah, and anybody who's seen a little Night Music, the opening number for Act Two, you know, 8 o'clock, twilight, 9 o'clock, twilight. It's, and it's true, it's true. So that is the Vargteamen. That is the Hour of the Wolf. There is a movie called Hour of the Wolf by Ingmar Bergman, which is where the title, Margot Adler, took that title from. And this is, and this show is named after that. So here's this episode of B5, this fellow by the name of J. Michael Straczynski, Joe Straczynski, who used to hang out with some guy named Harlan something or other, who used to hang out with a fellow named Mike Hodel. Mike Hodel, who had, in the earliest days of this radio program with Margot Adler, when I was the Thursday and Friday co-host, Mike Hodel was the occasional Monday co-host of Hour of the Wolf. Mike Hodel left WBAI, became news director of KPFK, our Los Angeles station, started a show there called Hour 25. So Ivanovich, at some point, and she's talking, Garibaldi says something. Well, that's like in, what is it, Hour 25? So there's a reference to Hour of the Wolf and Hour 25 in this one episode, right? Okay. Now, in those days, when Mike Hodel sadly died at a very early age, he had like a brain hemorrhage or something and died young. Ellison more or less took that show over and had Straczynski doing episodes. But as would be in Hollywood, they showed up only occasionally. They weren't always there to do the show. When they weren't there, I was asked by somebody to take out clips from Hour of the Wolf and put them on there. So I figured, I'd never met Joe Straczynski or anything like that, I figured, okay, we at least should know of each other, right? I certainly knew of him. When one year he becomes guest of honor at Icon, and he's there with Ellison, and I meet Joe Straczynski finally, I say, well, thank you for, you know, putting the name of my show in your series. He said, I did no such thing. I said, you made reference to the two shows. Utter coincidence, he claimed.
Wow.
By then, Hollywood had hold of him, and it was too late.
Clearly.
Too late, really.
Clearly.
Was that during the fifth season of Babylon 5? Because he could be forgiven almost anything for working that horrible season.
That was well after. That was like, you know, before the Galaxy Rangers or whatever.
There was Crusade?
Crusade. That misbegotten.
Bless their hearts.
This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM, Hour of the Wolf with Liz Story, Genevieve Valentine, and I am Jim Freund. And we are here to talk bad movies, bad TV, and geek out for the good geek in your imagination, but we are doing this because, not for doing this because, but in addition to that, we need to be raising money. We need to be supporting the station because I need the show to continue. And that's not going, that wasn't a bad peewee, was it? It wasn't intentional, but it sort of came out that way. I'm wearing headphones. So, for this show to continue, because if nobody has noticed, our program director, Tony Bates, has been reworking the schedule. I can say bleeping around with the schedule. He's been working the schedule for the first time in many, many years. The fact that he moved my show and placed me willy-nilly somewhere, not so good. The fact that he's changing things and bringing change to WBAI, that is a good thing. So we all need to work together on this premise. We all need to look forward to future screw-ups and future improvements. A major improvement, more arts programming on BAI in general. This is a great improvement. That there are intents for more. I was talking with the station manager yesterday at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings about a new book placed show on Thursday afternoons. Yeah. So improvements on the way. Will I be involved? Only if they think that I can raise money when it counts. 212-209-2950. Please call. Please pledge. Support WBAI. Become a member. If you want to talk to Liz and Genevieve,
bring it.
212-209-2900. We have a mere 20 minutes left. And yeah, it's, I know. No, we have to raise money, but this is too good to pass up. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, Robert.
Liz, you say you're from Austin?
Yes.
One of my favorite singers of traditional Scottish music comes from Austin. His name is Ed Miller. And he once gave the best two-word review for Braveheart I've ever heard. They asked him what he thought of it, and he said, "It's a haggis western."